Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org. Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. So another episode of the Westminster Kennel Club annual dog show has come and gone, and every year I get a little frustrated knowing that this is going on and knowing how hard so many people are working to end euthanasia of unwanted dogs and cats around the world. And yes, I believe that there's a connection between dog breeding, the American Kennel Club, and unwanted dogs in the United States. I'd like to welcome Elizabeth Orrick, National Manager of Puppy Mill Initiatives for Best Friends Animal Society, to discuss intentional breeding of dogs and its relationship to overpopulation and euthanasia. Welcome to the program, Elizabeth.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Elizabeth, every year when the show is televised, I just cringe because I just do not agree with the promotion of purebred dogs over mixed breeds, nor the creation of more dogs when we kill so many in our shelters. But Elizabeth, I wanted to begin by asking you about a specific aspect of the show, and that is, what happens to the popularity of the breeds that win the show? Do we see more of the winning breed in the market after a show?
Yes, that's exactly right. So for us, the concern is not so much with the dog shows themselves, but the effects that those dog shows have on the public and on the retail pet trade. And the fact that, as you just said, they do create this surge of demand for specific breeds of dogs, particularly the winning dogs. So people will rush out after the dog show to buy that breed of dog from a pet store or online or Craigslist or what have you. And the problem is that that type of dog may not be well suited to that person or family or home environment. And on top of that, aside from what you just said, which is that there's already such a surplus of dogs, wonderful, amazing, healthy dogs of all breeds and ages and sizes and temperaments just looking for homes in our shelters, but also that, in this case, it was the Beagle, right, that won the Westminster Best in Show. And that particular Beagle that won that prize was raised very differently than the Beagles that you find available for sale in pet stores or online or on Craigslist or any of those sources. And so there's this unfortunate misperception that if someone purchases a purebred Beagle from one of those pet retailers or online, that it's going to be of the same quality and that it was raised as responsibly and humanely as that Westminster Beagle was. And that's just unfortunately not realistic.
And so how does it work, Elizabeth? Do the breeders just go into high gear and start breeding, or do they take orders from potential customers?
Well, I think it depends which breeders you're referring to. Now, there are certainly caring, responsible breeders who are not very different from the puppy mills and the backyard breeders. These are the breeders who are doing it right. They're not doing it for profit. And so those are breeders who will not breed until they have met the potential purchaser and they have a contract with them and they insist on spaying and neutering them, and they'll make sure that that dog can always come back to that breeder if something goes wrong over the lifetime of the dog. But then there are the disreputable breeders who will, like you said, just start churning out those puppies knowing that there's going to be a market for them. It's like when Obama got the Portuguese water dog. All of a sudden, everybody wanted a Portuguese water dog, and so the breeders started basically creating the supply for what they knew was going to be a high demand.
Yeah, and I'll just tell you, you gave a good example about Obama. Also, research from Hal Herzog's group shows that movies featuring dogs can increase the numbers of dogs of that breed registered by the AKC for years after the film comes out, like we saw after 101 Dalmatians in 1996.
Exactly. And a big surge of the intake into shelters of those dogs. And so there's not just a problem with the overproduction of the dogs to meet this surge of demand. There's also the problem of where those dogs end up when they end up not being a good fit, or when they end up not, you know, they end up being impulse buys, and then people have second thoughts later, or in the case of 101 Dalmatians, people were buying entire litters for their kids so that their kids could experience the, you know, the joy of having lots of Dalmatian puppies running around. Well, that's a big reality check when those dogs grow into, when those puppies grow into dogs, and then what happens? They end up in the shelters. So it becomes all of our problems because those animals are being housed and killed in the shelters at the, you know, 9,000 a day at taxpayer expense.
Right. Yeah, the joys of witnessing the birth, the yeah. miracle birth. I know that's a common thing we hear. Elizabeth, so that's one element, what we just talked about, of my criticism with the shows and with featuring and promoting specific breeds. But I want to hear your opinion on the idea I presented earlier that breeding in general, whether responsible breeders or not responsible breeders, contributes to the dog overpopulation problem in the United States.
Well, of course it does. Of course it does. When we are seeing 9,000 dogs and cats being killed in our shelters every day, so thousands of dogs every day being killed simply because there aren't enough people adopting them, and meanwhile there are high-volume commercial breeders churning out 2 million puppies a year for the pet trade, that's an economic equation that is very difficult to wrap your head around, because it sort of begs the question, why do we continue as a society to mass produce a product for which there's already such a surplus that we're having to kill so many every day? And the answer, of course, is profit. But it really doesn't make sense. And it, with any other product, you know, and I'm referring to these puppies as products,
right.
Because that's really what they are to so many people who are profiting from the breeding and the sale of these
exactly.
puppies. You know, it's not an equation that you find normally in you know, the marketplace, in basic economics. You don't overproduce what you can't sell. And if you're killing a lot of healthy, loving, wonderful animals in shelters every day, that's, you know, that is the surplus that unfortunately is being compromised by this.
Talk a little bit about the American Kennel Club, which is responsible for breed standards and basically promoting the value and status of purebred dogs over mixed breeds. What is their role in dog overpopulation?
You know, it's really interesting. So the AKC has been around for a long time, right? They were established in 1886 to promote breed lineage, and that's still pretty much what they're known for. They're the good housekeeping seal of dog breeding. And, you know, they do some good work, they have some good programs, but they really are a big part of, as you said, the overpopulation problem, the shelter overpopulation problem, but also the puppy mill problem. They're a big participant in the profit and sale of these puppies, and that's ultimately, like so many things, a matter of just profit. You know, every time a puppy is registered with the AKC, no matter where or how it was bred, the AKC makes money. And so you can see why they would be inclined to oppose legislation, as they do regularly, that might result in fewer breeders and fewer dogs, whether it's spay and neuter legislation or stricter breeding regulations. Fewer dogs equals fewer registrations, which equals fewer registration fees. And so it really comes down to bottom line. And what's more, if they stopped registering those puppies, it would be really difficult for pet stores to be able to justify charging $2,000 or $2,500 for a puppy that's comparable to a puppy available in a shelter for $70. Those papers, those AKC papers, give this perceived value. And, you know, it's like a logo. It's like a designer logo. It's a mark of distinction that comes with a high price tag. But those papers really don't mean anything. They have no practical value. They are really just paper.
Does Best Friends Animal Society have a policy or position concerning dog breeding generally, and the AKC or other similar organizations specifically?
We do have a position on breeding, which is that, you know, listen, ultimately we wish that everyone would choose to adopt rather than purchase a companion animal when they're looking to bring a new one into the home. It just doesn't make sense to keep producing animals when so many are being killed for no other reason than there just aren't enough people adopting them. But we also do recognize the reality that not everybody is going to want to adopt. And so what we try and do is encourage adoption first and foremost. We try and promote adoption through programs, through our pet adoption centers, through education and raising awareness. And at the same time, we try and educate and steer the people who are not quite there yet in the right direction so that at least they're not supporting the worst of the worst of the pet industry, so that they're, if they are going to purchase a pet, that they're going to at least do their research, do their due diligence, and make sure that they are not supporting a disreputable puppy mill or backyard breeder, that they're finding, you know, a responsible hobby breeder. But we really hope that people will choose to adopt first and foremost. And I think we're getting there as a society. I think we are definitely on the right track. I think the culture has changed. People are starting to accept adoption as the first choice. They're starting to understand that killing does happen in our shelters, that the word shelter is an unfortunate misnomer that not everybody used to understand meant, you know, animals died. And so I think we're definitely moving in the right direction, but we have to be realistic about the fact that, you know, people evolve and people are educated at different paces.
Don't go away. More with Elizabeth Orrick. We're talking about the intentional breeding of dogs in the AKC and its relationship to overpopulation and euthanasia in our shelters. You're listening to Animals Today.
I'm going home. Do you got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea.
Well, let's hear it.
Successful businesses start with great ideas and cool inventions. Hi, everybody. I'm John Cremins, the doctor of Shopology. Join me and ACOS the Solutionist on My Cool Inventions every week. We continue our ongoing search for America's top invention. You could be the next one. Together, both ACOS and myself provide over 60 years of experience in the industry of inventing products and presenting them on shopping channels worldwide. Every show, we give our advice on how to successfully produce your product. Along with great information and featured industry guests, you'll also get a chance to listen to the inventors of some of the coolest inventions and vote on which projects you like. You be the shark. Now, if you have a $1 million idea in your head, submit it to us, and you can be selected to be on our show for your chance to be voted America's top invention. It's True Reality Radio, where you decide and regular American families like yours are lifted one innovation, one inventor, one American at a time.
Here's the problem. You spend half your life lying on your pillow, and the pillow's too hot. It's not comfortable enough. You're tossing and turning. You never get a comfortable sleep. Solution? The Supreme Comfort Pillow. Listen to this. It's the perfect pillow, period. Number one, it's got fantastic medium-density memory foam that puts you in the perfect sleep position night after night. It supports your neck, it supports your back. Not only that, it has Stay Cool technology. Imagine that, a pillow that's finely engineered to stay cool, giving you the perfect temper to sleep all night long. And it has bamboo charcoal technology. It absorbs moisture, it absorbs odors, and it keeps your pillow fresh and clean. Listen to that, fresh and clean every night, and the perfect technology to give you that perfect night's sleep with the medium density memory foam. This is engineered for astronauts, the same technology you can have in your home, and it always stays cool. The Supreme Comfort Pillow normally sells for $179, but the deal of the week, we have them on for $59.99. You heard me right, $60 for one-third the price. You call 1-888-877-0490, 1-888-877-0490, or go to mycoolgadgets.com. And the My Cool Gadgets deal of the week, 50 people, if you get on the phone right now, you'll buy one, get one free. You'll get two of them, still only $59.99. Call 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolgadgets.com. reduce the stress. Get the perfect night's sleep. And if you don't have the perfect night's sleep, you send it back for a full refund. That's the deal of the week guarantee. Money back guarantee. 1-888-877-0490. $59.99. Buy one, get one free. That's $30 each for the perfect night's sleep.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to the program. We're speaking with Elizabeth Orrick. Elizabeth, you mentioned best friends encourages adoption over buying from an individual breeder, and you state that some people just don't want to adopt. Isn't there a role for rescue groups in there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, one of the things that we try and make very evident to people who are not as familiar with rescue and adoption is that there are breed-specific rescue groups for every single breed of dog. So for those people that think they can't find what they're looking for in a shelter or with a regular rescue group that works with all breeds of dogs, and they think that they have to go to a pet store, they have to go online to buy that particular type of dog, that there are, in fact, breed-specific groups who can accommodate any need. Anybody who's looking for any breed of dog can find what they're looking for with a rescue group, in a shelter, on petfinder.com, any of those sources of adoptable dogs. They don't have to go to a pet store or go online.
Elizabeth, there's a phrase I think is deceptive, and that is responsible breeder. I know you used that term before, and I think it's deceptive because whether you're a breeder, whether you're responsible or not responsible, you're still contributing to the overpopulation problem that exists in our country. Is Best Friends okay with certain dog breeders? Does Best Friends use the term responsible breeding?
Well, we use that term to differentiate between puppy mills and backyard breeders. So whether or not we support breeding as a practice, we absolutely recognize that there are some people who are doing it better than others, and that these are the things that people who are not ready or willing to adopt an animal, who are determined to buy an animal, need to know so that they do not unwittingly support the worst of the breeding practices that go on. So, you know, some of the differences are very obvious. Responsible hobby breeders tend to spay and neuter, have a small number of dogs, only breed once a year, usually breed only one breed of dogs. Most importantly, will not sell to a third party like a pet store or sell online. And, you know, again, they're not in it for the profit. They're in it for the love and improvement of the breed, and they'll let people come and see where those dogs are raised. And so it would be really naive and irresponsible of us as an organization to not acknowledge the difference between those kinds of breeders and the puppy mills and the backyard breeders, because as much as we can wish everybody would choose to adopt and not buy their next pet, the reality is there are a lot of people who just haven't gotten there yet, and we need to keep working on them. And in the meanwhile, we need to steer them in a better direction and take them down a better path so that they're not keeping the cruelty of the puppy mill industry going while we're trying to educate them into adoption as the number one choice.
And I understand, and I do acknowledge the difference between responsible breeder, as you explain it, and the non-responsible breeder. I just think it's that term is an oxymoron. Whether you're responsible or not, like I said, it just contributes to the problem that exists in our country with dog and cat overpopulation. But so we're not going to agree on that, but that's fine. Thank you for explaining that so well. So Best Friends, Elizabeth, has a puppy mill initiative. What does that consist of?
That consists of really a multi-pronged strategy to try and address the cruelty of puppy mills, because as you know, puppy mills are an unfortunate legal industry, and so we can't just shut them all down as much as we would like to. Ultimately, the puppy mill problem, the puppy mill solution, is in the public's hands. puppy mills are only producing those puppies because people are buying them. And if people stop buying them, there would be no reason to produce them, and they would eventually all go away. And so we have to attack this problem from a number of different angles, which includes educating the public and encouraging adoption so that they don't continue to keep the industry going through their consumer choices, and advocating for better laws, in some case writing laws, that address breeding regulation, requiring inspections, improving on the animal care standards that breeders have to comply with. We're focusing very, very closely on getting ordinances enacted to actually prohibit pet stores from selling dogs and cats, and sometimes rabbits, unless they come from shelters or rescue groups, and trying to prohibit roadside animal sales. You know, all the things that contribute to the profit of the puppy mill industry. And so slowly but surely, we are shrinking down the number of puppy mills. We are increasing the number of animals that are getting adopted out of shelters and rescue groups. So we're making so much progress, and there are so many animal welfare organizations and rescue groups and committed individuals and concerned citizens who are contributing to that progress. And it's really encouraging, because I think we are seeing this industry die out.
Yeah.
We're just trying to expedite and facilitate the process so that we can get to that time when we won't be mass producing dogs for an oversaturated market, and people will start to adopt more more than they already are, and we will start to see the shelters empty out, and maybe we really can become a no-kill nation. I think we can. I think we're on track to getting there.
And you made a great point just now when you said there's some recent ordinances that have passed in pet stores where they can't sell. They're not allowed to sell puppy mill puppies, and they have to come from rescue groups or shelters or humane societies.
That's right. That's right. 75 communities throughout North America, that's cities, towns, counties, have enacted ordinances to prohibit these pet stores from selling milled animals. They can only offer rescued pets for adoption, which is so great, because there's a lot of people, even the people who do want to adopt, who just can't bring themselves to step foot in a shelter. You know, they're afraid it's going to be depressing and sad and noisy and loud and all those things. And so by allowing pet stores to have rescued animals available for adoption in their stores, it's really increasing the opportunities for those pets to find homes. And at the same time, it's not increasing the amount of animals being imported into the community from these high-volume commercial facilities in other states. And, you know, it helps relieve the burden on the shelters by getting animals out of those facilities and into retail pet stores where they have a better chance of being adopted. So it's really a win-win for the pets and the community and the adopters, and that's why we have such incredible momentum right now, and so many communities have enacted these ordinances, and now even states are starting to introduce state bills to ban pet stores from selling dogs and cats. So it's really encouraging.
We're heading in a great direction. Elizabeth Orr, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Rolling down Highway 95, sailing through a hometown countryside. Move on over, stand aside by cruise control and overdrive. Need to take my baby for a ride. Ooh, she rocks a smooth stretch of highway. Ooh, like a
If you're like most people, you have lots of plans. A financial plan, an eating plan, an exercise plan, a career plan. You also need a plan for the care of your pets when you're no longer able to provide it. Every day, animals are sent to shelters, terrified and confused, or they're euthanized because their owners have become incapacitated or died. Some people don't give the future a thought. Others assume family members will care for their pets. A better way is to name caregivers and provide detailed instructions about your pal's feeding, play, social, and healthcare needs. But even family and designated caregivers don't guarantee that pets will have a home. Good intentions sometimes take a backseat to life's realities, such as a new spouse who doesn't like animals, a sudden desire to travel the world, or the adoptive caregiver's own infirmity. A legally enforceable pet trust offers the only assurance that your assets will be used as you wish to provide for the comfort and care of cherished animal companions. More than 40 states recognize pet trusts. Check with your attorney, accountant, or state legislator to see if yours does and how to create one. Animals Today urges you to plan for your pet's lifelong well-being. Take steps today so he or she doesn't risk becoming yet another sad shelter statistic.
ACOS the Solutionist here. Imagine a device that constantly scans your house. It lets you know if there's an intruder getting in or out of your house, condo, or apartment. This spy versus spy technology is here. The activator simply plugs into any wall outlet of your home. You plug in a light, TV, or radio. When anyone's trying to enter your home, bang, the lights turn on. The stereo turns on. Whatever you plug into the activator turns on. Imagine the intruder being welcomed with light and sound. They're out of there. Not only that, when you come home in the dark, the lights turn on for you. The house welcomes you, hugs you. It's like not living home alone anymore. Normally, one activator costs $60, but this exclusive radio offer cuts the price in half and doubles it. That's two activators, $120 value for only $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490. That is 1-888-877-0490, or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com. Here's the problem. You spend half your life lying on your pillow, and the pillow's too hot. It's not comfortable enough. You're tossing and turning. You never get a comfortable sleep. Solution? The Supreme Comfort Pillow. Listen to this. It's the perfect pillow, period. Number one, it's got fantastic medium-density memory foam that puts you in the perfect sleep position night after night. It supports your neck, it supports your back. Not only that, it has Stay Cool technology. Imagine that, a pillow that's finely engineered to stay cool, giving you the perfect temper to sleep all night long. And it has bamboo charcoal technology. It absorbs moisture, it absorbs odors, and it keeps your pillow fresh and clean. Listen to that, fresh and clean every night, and the perfect technology to give you that perfect night's sleep with the medium density memory foam. This is engineered for astronauts, the same technology you can have in your home, and it always stays cool. The Supreme Comfort Pillow normally sells for $179, but the deal of the week, we have them on for $59.99. You heard me right, $60 for one-third the price. You call 1-888-877-0490, 1-888-877-0490, or go to mycoolgadgets.com. And the My Cool Gadgets deal of the week, 50 people, if you get on the phone right now, you'll buy one, get one free. You'll get two of them, still only $59.99. Call 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolgadgets.com. Reduce the stress. Get the perfect night's sleep. And if you don't have the perfect night's sleep, you send it back for a full refund. That's the deal of the week guarantee. Money back guarantee. 1-888-877-0490. $59.99. Buy one, get one free. That's $30 each for the perfect night's sleep. Here's the problem. Nail polish, hair dye, graffiti, tar. How do you get those stains out? Use Stains Are Out. Any stain, anywhere. Nail polish, oil, lipstick, pet stains, old stains, any stains. This will get your stain out. In fact, if it doesn't get your stain out, we'll buy the bottle back from you. Made with natural banana oil. Oil from the skin of a banana. Biodegradable and organic. Stains Are Out is the solution. Pour it on and get your stain out. Normally, bottle of Stains Are Out sells for $29.99. Hyper-concentrated, each bottle will make 16 bottles of stain remover. $29.99 for 16 bottles of dilution. And here's the deal. If you buy a bottle of Stains Are Out right now, we'll give you three bottles. That's 48 bottles worth. That's the deal. Buy one, get three bottles for $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolgadgets.com.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
According to our next guest, Michael Mountain, although we have made great strides in improving the problems of homeless dogs and cats, and the euthanasia rate of them has plummeted in the past two decades, for all the other animals around the world, the situation is getting worse. Michael and co-author Dr. Lori Marino have just published their article which tries to explain why we humans continue to treat non-human animals so horribly. Michael Mountain is one of the founders and former president of Best Friends Animal Society. His blog is at www.earthintransition.org and on Facebook at Earth in Transition. Hi, Michael.
Hi, thanks for having us on here.
You bet. Okay, so you and Lori Marino have a new scientific paper just published in Anthrozoos. What is its title?
A Denial of Death and Our Relationship to the Other Animals.
Okay, so...
That sounds kind of heavy-duty, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, and so I'll give you the chance to explain what motivated you to write it.
Well, we're very aware, as you just said, that the situation for most other animals is deteriorating at the moment, and I think most people who listen to your radio program know that we're in the early stages now of a sixth mass extinction. So we weren't trying to work out whether this is happening or not, but simply why it's happening. And it turns out that there is, in fact, a whole field of psychology that is to do with the underlying aspect of the human condition, which is that the one thing we humans don't want to be more than anything else is to be an animal. And the reason for that is that when we look at all of the other animals, we see that they are very physical and mortal, and the one thing we're all afraid of is dying. And so we try to kind of create sort of psychological distance and to tell ourselves that we're not animals and that we're not going to die. And we do this in just all sorts of ways, everything from like creating religions that tell us that we can live on after we die, and leaving great legacies behind us, putting up buildings in our own name, or looking for the elixir of life that will help us to kind of live on much longer and perhaps forever. And we've been doing that for thousands of years. But when we look at the other animals around us, we know that that actually isn't quite how it works, and it really is, in the final analysis, dust to dust and ashes to ashes. And the studies in this whole field of psychology show that when we're reminded, even at a kind of unconscious level, of our own mortality, this tends to bring about a more negative attitude toward our fellow animals. And there you then have this kind of really awkward, ironic, or paradoxical situation, which is that we feel that we have the power to have dominion over nature, subdue the earth, all of that good stuff. But in fact, what we end up doing with it is destroying the natural world around us.
Michael, you mentioned this branch of psychology. What does it refer to? What's the name of it?
It's called terror management theory, and that is to do with managing the terror that we have of our mortality. It actually came about as a result of a Pulitzer Prize-winning book by Ernest Becker back in the 1970s, which is called The Denial of Death. And he draws on just a wealth of psychology and philosophy and religion and great thinkers through the ages to probe this anxiety that we all have. And Ernest Becker himself couldn't come up with an answer for all of this, like a way out of it. He just felt that this was, as it were, the tragedy of the human condition. What we do in our paper, then, is actually tie this very directly to what is happening now all over the planet and our relation directly to all of our fellow animals.
So explain how this anxiety really allows us or leads people to make that psychological distance between the other animals. What's going on?
What's going on essentially is that When we look at the other animals, we see how mortal and physical they are. And we are probably, as far as we know, the only kind of animal that can really look out, you know, decades ahead. And when we consider the whole arc of our lives, we can see that that's what's going to happen to us too. Now, the other animals don't have this problem, as far as we can see. You know, they just get on with their lives, and they're not sitting around wondering what's going to happen in 20 years' time or something like that. So they don't have this. They may be highly intelligent, like chimpanzees and elephants and dolphins and so on, but they don't have this issue. We are just constantly, you know, just from our earliest years, aware of who and what we are. And in fact, it was the French novelist and philosopher, many people may have heard of, Albert Camus, who was writing in the 1940s. And he wrote that humans are the only creatures who don't want to be what they are. And what we don't want to be is an animal.
In your paper and your subsequent writings, you've referenced Stephen Cave. How does he enter into this?
Oh, yes. He actually wrote a fascinating book called Immortality, The Quest to Live Forever, and How, I forget the rest of the subtitle. But he goes in great depth into all the major ways that we humans try to put off the evil day, so to speak. And he points out that there are four basic kinds of what he calls immortality project. Like, for example, believing that we have a soul that will live on after we die, or that we're all the kind of elixir of life type stuff that I was talking about, and modern technology. I think one of the most well-known of these at the moment is all of these computer geniuses who are trying to figure out, well, along with medical profession type people, who are figuring out how to upload our brains to computers so that we can then go on living in a computer. All of these different ways that we try to avoid who and what we are and what's going to happen to us.
Right. So you've got a group of which we're all members of animal rights advocates or activists, and we're very connected with animals and we're protecting them. So are we different from everyone else? Are we less anxious about our own ultimate demise than everybody else?
Maybe. There have been some studies on this, nothing in great depth yet, which suggests that at least some of us have less anxiety because we feel a closer contact with nature. In fact, I think the person who put this best was probably John Muir, who was the founder of the Sierra Club. And also Henry David Thoreau.
Yeah.
And they both said that being in touch with nature, and they were out in nature all the time, made them less afraid of death. Because they could see that, you know, you go into the soil, and the soil is what nourishes new life, and they just felt, you know, at home and more connected through that. But I don't see a way that you're going to kind of convince 9 billion people at this point in time that there's a simple way out of this. I mean, this is very, very deeply rooted.
So can you end with any sort of optimistic note for us?
I'm always asked that. And I say very simply, we can all do everything that we can to support and help and do good for all our fellow animals. One thing that I think is obvious to most people who would be listening to your program is that, for example, we can stop treating them as commodities, which means not eating them, not wearing them, not going to entertainment shows like circuses and so on, and anything else that we can do. I mean, that is something that that we can all do.
Michael Mountain, thank you for sharing this interesting information with us on animals today.
Thanks for having us on.
You're listening to Animals Today. Check us out at animalstodayradio.com, where you can listen to all our previously broadcast shows. That's animalstodayradio.com. Animals Today Radio is largely sponsored by the nonprofit animal welfare organization Advancing the Interests of Animals. AIAnimals.org, AIAnimals.org. If you like this show, you like what you're hearing, please consider supporting Advancing the Interest of Animals by making a donation through their website, AIAnimals.org. And you can like us on Facebook.
As temperatures climb, please remember to never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute on a warm day with the windows cracked and in the shade. The temperature inside a car can climb up in a matter of minutes, and it's enough to kill your pet. If you love your pet, leave them at home or with someone you trust. Keep them cool, comfortable, and alive. And if you see a dog or other pet in a car, you may only have a moment to save their life. Here are a couple of steps that you should remember. Make an announcement in the store or business the car is parked nearest to, and call the police department or animal control right away. Remember, it only takes a minute or two on a hot day to kill an animal left inside a car. Your swift action can save a life. Dogs are unable to cool themselves the way people can. Never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute.
This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at AIAnimals.org. That's the letter A, AIAnimals.org.
If your car broke down right now, could you pay for the repairs? Did you know the average cost to replace a transmission is $2,500 and an air conditioning compressor costs $1,600? Call AutoSave Go today and have your covered repair bills paid for when your vehicle breaks down. If your car has less than 125,000 miles and is 2002 or newer, AutoSave Go offers affordable coverage that can save you thousands in auto repair bills. Coverage pays for parts, labor, diagnostics, taxes, and in most cases, even 24/7 roadside assistance. It's easy to qualify, and unlike other companies, we offer only the best coverage, always at the best price. It is unbeatable. Call AutoSave Go right now for a free, no obligation quote. Mention this radio ad and get free 24-hour roadside assistance with your coverage. Hurry, this is a limited time offer. For your free quote and free roadside assistance, call now. 800-260-9703. That's 800-260-9703. 800-260-9703.
Here's the problem. Nail polish, hair dye, graffiti, tar. How do you get those stains out? Use Stains Are Out. Any stain, anywhere. Nail polish, oil, lipstick, pet stains, old stains, any stains. This will get your stain out. In fact, if it doesn't get your stain out, we'll buy the bottle back from you. Made with natural banana oil. Oil from the skin of a banana. Biodegradable and organic. Stains Are Out is the solution. Pour it on and get your stain out. Normally, bottle of Stains Are Out sells for $29.99. Hyper-concentrated, each bottle will make 16 bottles of stain remover. $29.99 for 16 bottles of dilution. And here's the deal. If you buy a bottle of Stains Are Out right now, we'll give you three bottles. That's 48 bottles worth. That's the deal. Buy one, get three bottles for $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolgadgets.com.
Do you got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me. Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea. Well, let's hear it.
Successful businesses start with great ideas and cool inventions. Hi, everybody. I'm John Cremins, the doctor of Shopology. Join me and ACOS the Solutionist on My Cool Inventions every week. We continue our ongoing search for America's top invention. You could be the next one. Together, both ACOS and myself provide over 60 years of experience in the industry of inventing products and presenting them on shopping channels worldwide. Every show, we give our advice on how to successfully produce your product. Along with great information and featured industry guests, you'll also get a chance to listen to the inventors of some of the coolest inventions and vote on which projects you like. You be the shark. Now, if you have a $1 million idea in your head, submit it to us, and you can be selected to be on our show for your chance to be voted America's top invention. It's True Reality Radio, where you decide, and regular American families like yours are lifted one innovation, one inventor, one American at a time.
ACOS the Solutionist here. Imagine a device that constantly scans your house. It lets you know if there's an intruder getting in or out of your house, condo, or apartment. This spy versus spy technology is here. The activator simply plugs into any wall outlet of your home. You plug in a light, TV, or radio. When anyone's trying to enter your home, bang, the lights turn on. The stereo turns on. Whatever you plug into the activator turns on. Imagine the intruder being welcomed with light and sound. They're out of there. Not only that, when you come home in the dark, the lights turn on for you. The house welcomes you, hugs you. It's like not living home alone anymore. Normally, one activator costs $60, but this exclusive radio offer cuts the price in half and doubles it. That's two activators, $120 value for only $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490. That is 1-888-877-0490, or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Big news from Best Friends Animal Society, and that is it has created a new position. It's the Chief Digital Officer, and filling that position is my guest, Sue Citro. Welcome, Sue.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So why don't you start by just telling us, what is a chief digital officer?
Well, that's a good question. I think where the digital channel is at today for many companies and organizations, it means different things at different places. For us at Best Friends Animal Society, what we're looking to do is use the digital channel, mobile and social, to help advance our life-saving work for dogs and cats that are currently in America's shelters.
And your background is pretty impressive. Give us a little rundown of what you've been doing before this.
Well, for just about the last two decades, my work has focused on using digital, internet marketing, email marketing, to help the causes that I care about and to figure out ways we can reach new audiences, get more people to take up the cause of animal welfare and other important causes, and find new ways to get involved for areas and programs they care about.
And you've also had some experience sort of around the globe, which is really cool.
Yes, the last 3 years, my work is focused in Australia and Hong Kong, which were markets that we were opening up and building digital capacity there. And it was really a thrilling time for me to see how these channels are used for fundraising and for engaging new audiences a little bit differently than they are in the U.S. So trying to take some of that learning and lessons back home here to help now with animal welfare.
So speaking a little bit further about the development aspect of your position now in terms of growing the support, where do you see the next opportunities for Best Friends?
Well, Best Friends, I think, is so unique, where it is the only national animal welfare organization that's focused on ending the killing of dogs and cats in shelters. It really is a story that I think many don't know about. And with all the great work that Best Friends and its partners have done over the last 30 years, progress has been made. But where there are still, 4 million companion animals every year that are dying in shelters across the U.S., I think the digital channel can help us get that word out and get more people involved and ultimately get more of these animals in homes.
How do you find your older supporters and followers differ from the younger ones in terms of how they relate in the digital world, how comfortable they are in doing, say, online donations or getting their information on digital media?
Well, every day more and more people come online. It may be grandparents who are now FaceTiming with their grandchildren or, someone who's gotten a tablet or device as a birthday or holiday gift And so I think we're finding that more and more the U.S. population, especially U.S. adults, are on mobile devices and using tablets and are becoming more and more technology empowered. And so with that, I think it offers us a wide range of opportunities to help keep some informed that might not be able to come out to our sanctuary in Utah, where we run the largest animal sanctuary in the U.S., but they can still find out what's happening and about the impact and the difference that we're making each and every day with their support. I think for other volunteers, it's a great way for them to, especially younger volunteers, learn about our work and maybe find out about some of our programs and life-saving work that otherwise they may not have known. So what we're trying to do is make sure that we can use this channel, everything that digital offers us, to really segment and target audiences and invite them to join with us to make a difference, however they might want to do so.
And are you hoping to expand your support around the world? You mentioned U.S. a couple of times, but I bet you're not limiting yourself.
Well, you know, right now for us, what's really exciting is we're on the ground in New York, in California, in Salt Lake City. New York is a newer market for us where we are running a foster care and adoption program to reduce the number of shelter deaths in the city there. So that's our focus right now. And I think our focus really is on, you know, getting that number of 4 million cats and dogs that are being killed in shelters today down to zero. So that's definitely our focus right now.
And just as a final question here, one of the great things that we all are watching in digital and in online is the ability for specific education and training. How are you utilizing that sort of technology to train and educate specifically?
Well, I think that's so important, and a big part of what we hope to do is really increase awareness. And I think there's more and more opportunities every day, thanks to the digital channel and some of the education programs that you're talking about, to really help people understand what's going on. So that is, you know, something that I think is another tool in our toolbox that we can use to help get more people involved in animal welfare.
Well, thank you, Sue Citro. Sue's with Best Friends Animal Society. She's the new Chief Digital Officer. Thanks for joining us on Animals Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Animals Today. Check us out at animalstodayradio.com, where you can listen to all our previously broadcast shows. That's animalstodayradio.com. Animals Today Radio is largely sponsored by the nonprofit animal welfare organization Advancing the Interests of Animals, AIAnimals.org, AIAnimals.org. If you like this show, you like what you're hearing, please consider supporting Advancing the Interest of Animals by making a donation through their website, AIAnimals.org. And you can like us on Facebook.